people. Thank you for joining us in our weekly show about politics. As those of you watching will see, I am joined by Sarah Longwell today, my old buddy from DC, now a never Trumper, avidly committed to stopping Trump from getting in the Oval Office again. And she's the publisher of The Bulwark. Okay. And I listen to basically all of her podcasts.
I do.
I listen to The Next Level. I really like listening to Tim and Tim Miller, who we've had on here too. You and your buddy Jonathan V. Lass, JVL. Jonathan makes me laugh. You, like me, are a silver linings optimist, and Tim never pulls a punch. So I like you guys as a mix. And I also listen sometimes now to her new podcast with George Conway, where it's George Conway explains it all to Sarah about the legal stuff. The reason I like that is because George Conway hates Trump with a white hot passion and wants to see him in jail and can't say it enough. So
it's true. I'm always like, look, I'm not a lawyer, man, but I don't think he's going to jail like tomorrow. And George is like, he's going right away. He is.
I mean, it might be like, it's one of those things where it might be what I want to hear. So yeah. I listen, but it's okay. I mean, I think we all have to have those havens where we hear what we want to hear every once in a while, as long as we just don't live there all the time.
Yeah. Well, the problem is I do the focus group podcast too. And so people are always so depressed after the focus group podcast, listening to real voters, especially Republicans, that I feel like I need to give them something else to make them hopeful. And George right. gives them the hopium of Trump jail time.
Right, right, right. So, right. And the focus group podcast. I mean, that's how I got hooked on the Bulwark section of podcasts was with the focus group, where you can hear actual voters saying what they think. And yes, it can be depressing, but it gives you a good look at what we're actually dealing with in terms of the electorate. Okay, so enough about Sarah. She's got a lot. She's doing a lot of stuff. She took time out to be with us today. And it is, we are recording this on Friday morning, just after the State of the Union. And by the time listeners hear this next week, they will have heard a lot about the State of the Union, right? I am still high at this moment off of Joe Biden's performance last night. And rather than asking you about substance, I just want to ask you a quick question. Given the fact that you do these focus groups, you know what voters are worried about in terms of Joe Biden, or perhaps not enthusiastic about in terms of Joe Biden and casting a ballot for him. Given his, you know, pretty feisty and, you know, energetic performance, I don't think anyone could, you know, argue with those words last night at the State of the Union. What do you think that did in terms of some of the objections that certain voters that you listen to have?
Yeah, I mean, look, voters across the political spectrum are obviously, I mean, and you've heard about this endlessly, concerned about Joe Biden's age. But here's the thing, Democrats talk about his age in sort of a kind way, but they all still say, oh, I worry about him tripping. I worry about him not being able to get a sentence out. And they're like rooting for him, but they do worry about it. Whereas Republican voters say he's got dementia. He's senile. And that seeps in to the swing voters. They're not as sort of mean or committed to that narrative as the two-time Trump voters, but it's really in there. The idea that he just might not be all there, that somebody else is running the show. And I think what last night did was it just took a real bite out of that idea that the guy is being weakened at Bernie'd, you know, in the presidency. He was, look, he's an old guy, but he kind of did a couple things that I really appreciated. He hung a lantern on that and said, look, I'm old, but that doesn't mean my ideas are old. The other guy's ideas are old. He also, and I said this all along, he has got to show people something. He's got to have a knife in his teeth. He's got to go on offense. He's got to show people that he's mentally competent. And he did that and then so. I mean, the Republicans sometimes make this mistake where they set the bar at dementia. And then he clears it. And last night he cleared it by such a wide margin. You can't even see the bar. He cleared it so well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I will say this. One of my favorite tweets from last night was Alex Bays, I think, who is a comedic writer for SNL and some others. And he said, if this is dementia, I hope I get it when I get older.
Right? Yeah, like, totally.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. So let me say, let me just put an exclamation point on that. You know, you said like, you know, Democrats are thinking, oh, God, you know, we're going into this election, incredibly high stakes, and we've got a guy who's 80 plus, right? And what I have noticed about anyone who really loves what they do and does it really well is that when the stakes are high, they want to be in the game. Okay, so I'm a big college football fan. I love University of Michigan. We obviously had a really good last year. We won the national championship. It was a long road. But anyway, but you know, when the stakes are high and the defense needs to make the stop of an Alabama team, you know, in the Rose Bowl in overtime, the defensive players want to be in the game. They're not like, oh, no, not me. Put someone else in. They want to be in the game. Okay, this is where I think Joe Biden is, and I think it's a little bit of a superpower for him, right? Everybody else around, Democrats are like, oh, I'm worried about this. I don't know. You know, okay, here we are. This is where we are. We just need to accept that, right? And some people are happy about it, and some people aren't. But what I know is, and what he did last night was prove that Joe Biden wants to be in the game. This is his game. He wants to be in it. He believes he can win. And that is the type of leadership that people can rally behind. And so I think he gave Democrats last night something to rally behind. Okay, so let's move on. Sarah's expertise is figuring out where voters are, and particularly this November, trying to get them to a place where they will hopefully cast a vote for democracy in favor of Joe Biden, not Trump, and or at the very least, not cast a vote for Trump. Okay, she's working with a smallish pool of voters who are probably center right. I mean, I should let you describe this, but she's trying to move them to a place, right? This is what she hopes to do with these focus groups. She doesn't tell the focus groups what to do. She figures out what the focus groups, what the voters are saying and thinking, and tries to find the messaging that she can move them. Does that sound right,
yeah,
Sarah? Is that a basic?
Yeah, look, okay. That's right. In 2020, I ran a group called Republican Voters Against Trump. And you'll note that it wasn't Republican voters for Joe Biden, right? It's Republican voters against Trump. And the same thing is true in 2024. We're building not a pro-Joe Biden coalition, you're building an anti-Trump coalition. And that includes people who voted for Trump twice, who after January 6th won't vote for him again. And those are real people that we talk to. You know, you're talking to people who maybe voted for Trump in 2020 because they like kind of decided that they liked him after the first term, but then after January 6th, don't like, there is this pool of sort of right-leaning independent, soft GOP voters who a variety of reasons don't want to support Trump. And you were trying to get as many of those to become net voters who vote for Biden, or at least to not vote for Trump. There's a different valence to those voters, though, this time. Like in 2020, those were persuadable voters that you think about. They're like, oh, I really hate Trump. Like, okay, Biden's acceptable. Now they're a little more locked into what we call sort of being double haters or double doubters or a pox on both their housers. And this is starting to, we've been talking about this for a long time, but it's starting to kind of reach mainstream understanding that, like, okay, what you've got is a chunk of voters, maybe 15, 20% of the voting population who hate both these guys. They're not happy with Joe Biden. They also hate Donald Trump. They're not Democrats. And these people love Nikki Haley, right? Because she's an off-ramp to neither guy. It's not even that maybe they're so hot on Nikki Haley per se. They just really want to move on from Trump and they don't want to vote for Joe Biden. And I describe this as voters going through the five stages of grief, right? So like, there's a lot of denial. Like for a long time, I'm listening to voters be like, it can't be these two again. It's impossible. They're going to replace Joe Biden at the convention and Donald Trump's going to lose to Nikki Haley. False. It's going to be the two of them. There's anger. You see the anger showing up in the Joe Biden's poll numbers, approval numbers. They're low because people didn't want him to run again. You see the bargaining. That's your RFK, third party, no labels, those things. There's got to be somebody else. Let's swap out Kamala. Then now we're in depression. We've been in sort of depression here for a little bit too, where it's just like, no, it can't be these two. That's awful. I don't want to vote for either of them. But pretty soon we're going to come around to acceptance. And acceptance is where people say, okay, I have to make a choice between these two guys. And Joe Biden has always been, Joe Biden and Democrats in general who are running against extreme Republicans have always been on the winning end of these double doubters or double haters or people who don't really want to vote for a Democrat. But ultimately, Donald Trump is so repellent when he is sort of full view for people. And I think right now that's part of what's working for Trump is people have a little bit of Trump amnesia. But as he becomes front and center, you're going to see, I think, the contours of this race start to shift a little bit, because it will be a contrast election in ways that up until now, there have been these mental off ramps for people that have allowed them to say, like, well, I'm not going to vote for Biden. But I actually think more people will get there as we go on and we see more from Trump and people remember how dangerous and unhinged he is. And they'll be like, OK, the old guy, fine.
Yeah. And I do think the Biden campaign seems very aware of this, and they seem to be very purposely setting up these split screen opportunities like they did at the border last week, where they figured out Trump was going to the border and he was going to talk about the invasion and, you know, and immigration and stuff like that, which is a real issue for a lot of people. And they were like, fine, we're going to send Biden down there too. And Trump is going to rant and rave, and Biden's going to sound like he's looking for real solutions. And then he went ahead and challenged congressional Republicans to pass that very stringent border deal that they negotiated. And, you know, it was a really good moment. They're going to be in Georgia this weekend. It's going to be another split screen opportunity where Trump's going to be holding a rally in Rome, I think, in a rural, like, northern Virginia. And then Trump is going to be there, sorry. And Biden is going to be in metro Atlanta, right, trying to shore up sort of the suburbs and some of the African-American vote around the suburbs and out in a little further in metro Atlanta, right? So they're working on that. From your standpoint, I heard you mention something interesting. You talked about a percentage of double doubters who you think it's about 15 to 20%. Do you think, like, we've had, you know, Super Tuesday, we've had the three early contest or four early contests, I guess, if you count Nevada, but that was such a mishmash. But anyway, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. When you look now as the dust settles, is that the pool of potential gettable voters? Is it just 15 to 20%? Is it closer to 30% in your book? What do you think it is?
So I'm playing with two different kind of numbers here. So the first one, where I think it's 15 to 20%, and there's been polling that people have done on this, are people who are like, I have strong distaste for either of them. That is a different number from where I would say there's been a real persistent 30-70 split that we're seeing in the Republican Party, right? So if you ask people, if you ask Republicans, do you think the election was stolen? 70% say yes, 30% say no. If you ask Republicans, will you vote for Donald Trump if he is convicted of a felony? 31% say no, 69% say yes. If you look at Nikki Haley's Republican ID'd voters who voted for her in South Carolina and in New Hampshire, it's right around 28%. Michigan, it was 27%. So there's this rough number that keeps coming up of people who are kind of move on from Trumpers in the Republican Party. Now, here's the thing. The reason why I say the persuadables are closer to 15, 20% and not that 30% is some of that 30% goes home to Trump. And some of that 30% is out. There are people like me who are always going to voted for Biden before, going to vote for him again, but they had been lifelong Republicans. And so, like, they're kind of, they know where they're going once Nikki Haley's out. But there's then this group of people who are like, I might leave it blank. I might stay home. I don't know what I'm going to do because I don't like either of them. Ugh. And that, I think those are like, that's persuasion usually tends to be people who, like, don't have all the information. And so you're trying to persuade them one way or another. That's not what the persuadable cohort looks like this time. And it's why, frankly, it's such a bummer of an election, because when you have double haters, you're basically trying to get them to, like, pick which one they hate more. And this is something you hear in focus groups all the time, is voters talk about lesser of two evils. And what they mean is ultimately they make a choice based on negative polarization. Like, who do I hate more and who do I hate slightly less? And, like, that's the ball game this time. It's like, you got to have the persuasion game is Trump is scarier than Biden, like the old guy and Kamala Harris, who becomes much more relevant in the context of Joe Biden's age, are not as scary as the second term of Donald Trump, which is why Donald Trump's vice presidents are never going to have mattered as much as they're going to matter in this upcoming election between two old dudes, both of whom have real weaknesses. And that's why, I know this is going to come out later, but that's why Katie Britt's rebuttal, who I think she was on the short list for VP, and that's over. She gave a catastrophic rebuttal. She was embarrassing. She was a self-immolating speech, and she is no longer on the short list.
Thanks for playing Katie. That's okay, because there's a lot of people who are ready to lie like a rug for Trump. And we know Elise Stefanik is one of them who has been auditioning for that job. You know, we know that Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina is ready to take that up, which I find shameful. It's shameful for both of them, frankly. But anyway, he's going to have lots of options for his VP list. But I look forward personally. I didn't see Katie Britt's rebuttal last night, and I can't wait to, as soon as we get off of this podcast, I'm going to go watch it because apparently was a disaster. It sounded like she birthed a cow on camera. So, okay. So now as you start to think, because you are actually a messaging strategist, right? This is really your bread and butter, even though you do all these other things. And as you start to think about how you're going to go after these voters, is it mostly talking about, you know, Trump and how bad he is? I mean, here's the thing. I think from listening to you, and reading a bunch of polls and whatever, is that not a lot of these voters really just don't believe. I mean, some of them do, but it seems like a lot of Republican voters just really don't believe that Trump is like going to be a dictator and we're not going to have meaningful votes after he. That's something that a lot of Democrats believe. A majority of Democrats certainly believe that, right? But it's that type of thing doesn't seem like it's going to work as well with some of the voters you're trying to persuade. So what are you imagining could work with those voters?
Yeah, this is actually more simple than you might think. So in 2022, Republicans turned out at a higher rate than Democrats, but Democrats still won key races. And the reason they won key races was not because of abortion singularly or democracy singularly. It was a combination of those two things, as well as the extremism of the candidates, right? So you'd be talking about Blake Masters and people would be like, oh, that guy's like crazy on abortion. He is an election denier. And he's like friends with the Unabomber. You know, they were just like, this person's nuts. And that is like a normal human thing. It wasn't tons of policy. It was just like, this person's too far out there for me. And I think that that's the dynamic you're looking for with Trump versus Biden. A little bit. So Biden has to do a few things that was kind of like fighting to par. He needs the economy to be better. Like he needs to cut. The interest rates have to get cut and people have to be feeling it. Now, great news. The economy's doing better. It's going in the right direction. And so I think that he could be okay on that. He's got to do some work on the border. It is his biggest vulnerability. He's got to show people he cares about it. He's got to go on offense against Republicans for scuttling the bill that he put forward. The politics of that, he can win that. Like, there's some things he has to do. But a lot of it is Joe Biden could be a tomato can, right? Like, you need people to think, man, Donald Trump is an outright lunatic. Not only did he appoint the Supreme Court justices, who were the ones who repealed Roe, but also Mike Johnson's the speaker now. And oh man, last time his cabinet were people like Mattis and Esper and all these serious people. Those people are gone, right? Mike Flynn's going to be in his cabinet. The guy who tried to overturn the election is going to run DOJ, Clark. You know, like you have to sort of paint a picture of people about the future of Donald Trump and how insane it's going to be. And so I don't think you just be like, oh, democracy, that's not going to work. But the extremism coupled with the fact that people think, this guy's such a jerk. Like that is like the reaction that swing voters have is like when he's back in people's faces, they're like, oh, that's right. He's awful. And that's where when Trump is being sort of funny guy, like he can win people over by people being like, because they don't think. So like take abortion, for example. Voters think Trump is a cultural moderate. Nobody believes that Donald Trump is super Mike Pence pro-life. And in the focus groups, people are always like, I'm pretty sure he paid for some abortions. Like his court cases, like one of them is about having sex with a porn star. Like people think, well, that's going to really hurt him. You know, it's about forging documents. Like, no, he gets to be an old guy who's talking about having sex with porn stars. Like there's that makes him seem virile and young and whatever. So you've got to go on offense. That's not just like he's a dictator, but you do have to show people how dangerous he is. I think I actually don't mind the dictator stuff that much. I just think you have to prove it, right? Sometimes like you can't just throw it around. You have to really paint a picture for what Trump's second term will be like. And you can't say things like Schedule F, you know, like voters, they have no idea what that means. And as far as they're concerned, well, why can't you just fill, you know, posts with people that Trump wants to appoint? Isn't that how it works? Like, there's a bunch of things that people talk about that are not important, but going on offense against Trump and the whole Republican Party, the Mike Johnson of it all, their crazy views on abortion, IVF, talking about doing a good job, but mainly, yeah, you got, and people will hate Trump on their own. Like, Trump is a turnout machine for Democrats. He will paper over a lot of the division. And when he really starts to get rolling, like, and he's back front of mind for people, I do think you're going to see the contrast start to shift.
Agree with that. And that's one of the reasons that I like this split screen thing that the Biden campaign is going after, right? Is it's a really nice, I mean, first of all, it gets Biden coverage that he might not otherwise get on certain things, right? It's like, oh, the split screen. I mean, the media eats it up. And then you've got, you know, you've got Trump sort of doing lunatic things and saying nasty things. And he, you know, he sort of delights in nastiness. And Biden actually, you saw Biden last night at the State of the Union. He delights in policy. He delights in mixing it up a little bit, right? But his fun is in the politics of like, oh, Republicans, you don't think that border deal was strong enough? You know, that type of thing. So anyway, all right. So let me do sort of we're getting short on time and I want to do a little bit of a lightning round here. I've got three lightning round questions. Do you think Haley will endorse Trump when she, you know, I don't know, several months from now, when he wins the nomination? Nikki Haley, will she endorse? And how much does it matter?
I think it matters a lot. I'm going to say no, because I need to will it into the world. I cannot let my cynicism. I understand Nikki Haley flip flops, does a lot of bad faith things. Can't trust her on this stuff. But like when her whole point of her dropout speech with quoting Margaret Thatcher and about being brave was about going your own way. And, you know, I hope that that's what she sticks with. But look, people like Nikki Haley, and like Mitt Romney, we saw Todd Young today, Senator Todd Young, Republican, not going to endorse Trump. Those people are going to matter, because it is that you build permission structures for the voters who don't like either of them to be like, well, Biden's worse, right? This is the thing. When it comes down to who's worse, if people like Nikki Haley are saying, well, Biden's worse, there's a chunk of voters who will arrive at that conclusion too. And she needs to be like, no, I'm not endorsing. I'm not going to endorse Trump because Trump's unfit.
Right. And she gave him an open door to sort of woo her voters. And the first thing he did was mock her and say he trounced her, you know, so like this week. So it was a bad moment, I think, for Team Trump.
Yep. Yeah. And just all right. Say, he's saying to these voters, he's saying he doesn't want them. Like, he's saying, if you like Mitt Romney, get out of the party. If you like Nikki Haley, you're permanently barred. If he wants to play the politics of subtraction, God bless. Go ahead, Trump. See how it works.
Yeah, I listened, as a quick aside, I listened to a conservative commentator, Scott Jennings, who you probably know, talk about how he doesn't think, he knows Trump's not trying to invite more people into his coalition. He's trying to replace the Haley voters that he's losing with working class voters who are Black and Latino. And I was like, really? And I mean, I know that there's some polling that suggests this is possible, but that New York Times Siena poll had Trump winning Latino voters by like 3 or 4 points. I'm sorry. No, actually 6 points. There's no way. There's no way. And they did 97% of those interviews with Latino voters in English. So, you know, I have a hard time believing that's a good trade for them.
Maybe. I don't know. I would be careful with this one. I'm nervous about it in part because the focus group episode that's coming out this weekend is with Black voters who voted for Hillary Clinton, voted for Biden, and now are leaning toward Trump. And I don't know about the New York Times Siena poll. I just wouldn't want us to self-soothe too much. They think Trump is funny, that he understands what it's like to have people go after you for trumped up charges. There was a lot of interesting things in there. And I've done Hispanic groups too. They are culturally conservative. They hate socialism. Like, and Hispanics are a big, broad category. So I'm just, I'll say what Scott Jennings is right about. He's right what Republicans are trying to do. A Republican will tell you that they want to be a working class party that is a multiracial working class party. That is, they are trying to eat Democrats' lunch with minorities and eat into their margins there because they know they're hemorrhaging college-educated, suburban, mostly white voters, and they are trying to replace them.
Right. So I share your concern. I'm a little bit more concerned about some Black voters who are unenthusiastic about voting for Biden than those who are actually thinking about voting for Trump. I'm not saying it couldn't be a problem, but I'm a little bit more concerned about that personally. Okay. on a scale from 1 to 10, how good do you feel about November?
Oh,
sorry.
I mean, the stakes. Look, I think that if it's a head to head and there's not a good third party showing, that Biden can win. I think he will win. That being said, I do not feel good about any of it. The stakes, I mean, the level of danger that is real and facing us. And like, Joe Biden did a great job last night. I was deeply impressed with his performance. But like, it's tough to go into that battle with an 81-year-old. It just is. So feel good.
All right. Last one. North Carolina, I find super interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think they could put it in play? They now have the marquee, the leader of that. Well, the leader of the ticket, of course, will be Trump. But the Republican candidate for governor now is a Holocaust denier, a super MAGA extremist, and has said all sorts of terrible things, and is exactly the type of candidate you're talking about that was defeated in 2022. Do you think it's possible for Democrats to put it in play?
I think it's possible for Democrats to win that governor's race. I don't chase North Carolina. I'll just say as a practical matter, and here's the thing. You have to win Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I think the next state after that is Arizona. And Arizona has a similar dynamic with Carrie Lake is going to be back on the ticket. Also a lunatic who got rejected. Not just like she got beat by one of the most boring, worst Democratic candidates of the 2022 cycle, which shows you how bad Carrie Lake was. And so I would be hesitant to start. I think you should try to win that governor's race because that guy is a bona fide lunatic. I think you should hang that guy around Trump's neck. But if people get distracted by North Carolina, I will be like, Dad, don't spend all your resources there chasing something. Fortify that blue wall. Make sure you got those because you got to win. Like, get to 270.
Yeah, we've got a good Senate race to run on in Arizona with Representative Ruben Gallego. So that's going to be that's a solid. You're saying go after your strengths, which are probably Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Make sure you shore them up, and then let's try to bank Arizona as a failsafe. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Sarah Longwell. Really appreciate your time. You're super busy. You can catch her over at the Bulwark. She occasionally pens a piece for the Atlantic. She also has, you know, these three podcasts I talked about. Those are the three, right? The Focus Group, The Next Level, and George Conway Explains
It All. Yep.
Explains It All.
Plus subscriber. And there's one more with me and JVL, Secret Pod.
Ooh, the Secret Pod. So
deep.
Become a subscriber. But you know, one thing I love about the Bulwark is Sarah describes it as a mission and not a business. And so a lot of their content, I mean, she wants the plus subscribers. Their mission is good. They're doing good work. They've got great content, but also a lot of it is free because I saw you write, you can't save democracy from behind a paywall. And I appreciate that. So all right. Thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you all for joining us. You know, stick with us. We're going to be on top of this election throughout. And your engagement as voters, you talking to your people and being persuaders is extremely important in this election cycle. Thank you for joining us today. We will see you next week right here on The Brief.